later on in the program, Diane Karp is going to be here sitting in for Rob DeWalt, who is out today. I'd like now to introduce Linda Siegel with today's legislative update, and it's the last legislative update during the session.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
It's good to be here in person.
Yes, it is. Yeah, last week it was snowing so hard that we talked to you in your car from a snowbank or something.
Yes.
So, okay, what's going on? Before we went on the air, Linda Siegel uttered the sentence, "The budget is very interesting."
Well, to legislative geeks like me. Well, and actually, the budget is the thing that we're required to do in the 30-day legislative session.
Indeed.
And it was actually held up for a week in House Appropriations because there were some problems the governor didn't like, and they held it for a week, and then they pretty much passed it out just as they had originally agreed.
Uh-huh.
And it's gone over to the Senate, and it goes into the Senate Finance Committee first.
Okay.
And as we've talked about, there's about $254 million new dollars.
I thought that was questioned.
Well, it was questioned, and then it was re-verified.
Okay.
So everyone's feeling relatively confident that money is there.
And so 254 different people each want a piece of that.
Well, that's the capital budget, which we'll talk about in a minute.
Ah, okay.
But so the budget, House Bill 2, has gone over, and it's sitting in the Senate Finance Committee, and it just got there. So yesterday, what happens, of course, is the House appropriates most of that new money, but they leave a little pot for the Senate so that the Senate can get some of their projects in. Yesterday, all the members of the Senate were putting in amendments. The last time I checked, there were over 400 amendment requests to put money into House Bill 2 from the Senate. And there's about $12 million that they didn't spend in the House, so the Senate will be able to appropriate that. And then in a day or two, maybe even today, the Senate Finance Committee will have a hearing, and they'll go through all those budget amendment items, and they'll pick the ones they want. And then they'll put that in. And
any juicy examples?
Oh, you know, people are wanting to get some of the money back that programs lost, like domestic violence, putting
right.
some money for that, child care, health clinics, things where there have been cuts. And then occasionally there's a new appropriation request. But right now they're probably going to be focusing on trying to really get some money back into the system, particularly in the safety net system for programs that over the last 3 years have been, in some cases, decimated, sexual assault programs.
Yeah. And things that, for the people, for most of us, are under the radar, and for the people who are experiencing them, are potentially life and death.
Oh, yeah. When you have domestic violence shelters who say, "We can't take you. You come to the door, you're a woman fleeing an abuser," and we go, "We have no space." Sexual assault, I was in a hearing the other day where the sexual assault, and you know, it's like the rape crisis centers, were saying that the numbers are on the increase and they have less and less resources to deal with it.
Yeah.
So there are lots of safety net issues that that we don't hear about every day, but where people are suffering.
And I think it's telling that those two examples are essentially women's health and safety issues.
Isn't it? And children's issues. The child care subsidy was cut by over $10 million in the last few years. And so fewer and fewer working families can get assistance with child care. So where do their kids go? Where do they put their children when they go to work? They
in front of the television set so they can learn to read by the third grade.
Yes, there you go.
All right, so, sorry, continue.
All right, so that is the budget process, the most important thing we have to do this session. And, of course, the session ends at noon on the 16th. So we don't have that many days left to get this process done. And what will probably happen with the budget, it'll go up in the last day or so, so that the legislators can go home, and then the governor can decide what she wants to do with the budget line item, veto it, or whatever she decides
to
do.
What would you call it, politically opposed to things like domestic violence
programs
and all that?
No, I don't think so.
Okay,
I think she just has other, more, for her, more pressing priorities, because remember the governor said she wanted about $42 million or $50 million worth of tax cuts. And if this budget goes as proceeds, there is no money for tax cuts. I think the legislature has said pretty clearly now is not the time to do tax cuts. So that may be where there's some line item vetoing of different projects, if possible.
So they can give 4 cents back to each family.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, so that's the budget. Now, there's also a separate process called capital outlay.
Yes, and over the years, we've talked a lot about the pork,
yes.
The capital outlay.
Bacon,
pork.
Yes.
In the last few years, that's been a much more conservative process, and they've really, the legislature and the governors, because Richardson was in this too, in this decline, have focused a lot on statewide capital programs, big programs, roads, and things that benefit, construction projects that benefit large numbers of people. But this year, for the first time in several years, every legislator is getting their little pot of money, which is the way it's been for years in the past. And with that little pot of money, they fund local projects.
And so they build a half a senior center and then
run
out of money.
The way they're doing it now is that the different areas of government, like the county, the city, the public schools, the Santa Fe Community College, we all go to our legislative delegation and say we've got these projects that we'd like you to put capital money. So for the community college, for instance, we ask for some money for some more equipment at the Trades and Technology Center. And that's a small piece that can be totally funded in this one project. And the public schools, they've asked for some smaller things like new phone systems. And the city and the county have put in requests for things that can be funded with the total amount the legislators might have. But each senator, at least the last time I heard, was getting about $700,000, and each House member about $350,000, $400,000. For these local projects. That helps us locally generate more economic development and helps our local economy. So that's very important. But the governor doesn't really like that idea. So will she line item veto all the local projects?
Huh.
Possible. We don't know.
What about job creation?
There you go.
All right. All right. Early childhood, this is something we talk about, and I meant by today to do the calculation, but I just didn't get around to it because I'm not real quick at stuff like this, but to do the calculation of how many years it would take if they didn't promote children beyond the third grade who couldn't read until 50% of New Mexican school children were in the third grade. If there's anybody over at Los Alamos who can do that calculation in 2 minutes, write me an email, radiocafe@ksfr.org. But anyway, there's a constitutional amendment?
Well, there have been several constitutional amendments, and a quick recap, in 2003, of course, there was a constitutional amendment passed by the legislature, and remember, constitutional amendments have to be approved by the voters in the next election, and that constitutional amendment took a percentage, an escalating percentage, out of the land grant permanent fund and gave it to the public schools to really expand education and to create much better pay for teachers and to really help the education system. Well, that money is also, it escalated and then it declines. And that the money that's going to the public schools will start to decline in a year or so. And the early childhood people said, let's piggyback on that. Let's get the public school amount back up to the 5.8% distribution and then add more up to a 7% distribution to have that piece between 5.8% and 7% go to early childhood education.
Uh-huh.
And that means not just kindergarten and pre-kindergarten in the public schools, but all the programs administered like by the CYFD, the Children, Youth, and Families Department, that do home visiting for new families so that the parents can learn parenting skills. Child care services, high quality child care services, because in most of your high quality child care programs in New Mexico, which start at 1 day old, after an infant is able to move around a little bit, they start teaching kids. And when you look at studies of kids that have gone to quality early childhood programs, they come to kindergarten prepared, some can read, and you've really got a head start on it.
Come to kindergarten prepared? Well, that makes my brain explode.
Well, if you don't get, this is what I've learned, this is not anything that I knew, but I've learned it from the early childhood people, is that you stimulate kids with play and all different kinds of activities that help them learn social skills and that help them learn to do all those things that make them ready to go learn how to read and sit still and
reading and sitting still. Well, the thing is, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, this is a long discussion. I think I'm going to probably have to do a series on education and early childhood education, things like that. But you would think that the most important thing they could do is kind of teach parents to provide that environment as opposed to making programs to send the kids into.
Well, that's part of what the home visiting is. But, you know, parents, it's a different world than when we were growing up where, I mean, my mother was at home, and we did all kinds of activities around the home, and I learned a lot that way. And a lot of parents, they're just not at home. They're both out working because
right.
they need to keep food on the table.
Because of this economy, yes.
Right.
So
that's coming up for a vote in the next day or so. It's in House Education today. And we'll see how it goes. It's controversial because taking this higher percentage out of the permanent fund makes a lot of legislators really nervous.
Yeah, because how permanent will the permanent fund be if you drain it?
Yeah.
Speaking of parents trying to make ends meet, there's a minimum wage bill.
Well, this is another constitutional amendment, and actually this just popped up on my radar yesterday because it passed out of the Labor Committee. It's a House joint resolution carried by Miguel Garcia, who's a representative from Albuquerque. But what it says is that the state minimum wage would have to be increased by the cost of living every year.
Nice.
The state has passed a minimum wage bill. The feds have a minimum wage bill. Of course, here in Santa Fe, we have a what we call living wage, minimum wage. But this would require that every year automatically the minimum wage in the state of New Mexico, the state's minimum wage, would go up by the cost of living. Now, it doesn't have a chance, but it's an interesting concept to put that into the Constitution. And if it passed the legislature by some miracle, it would go on the ballot in the November election, just like the early childhood one will.
Now, we have talked about the PRC.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on with that?
Well, as we've talked about, just in the last week or so, the House of Representatives, all of those 70 members, have unanimously passed three PRC reform constitutional amendments.
And to remind our listeners who've been on vacation until yesterday and are just tuning in, Public Regulation Commission basically requiring, these bills would require that people who run for that office have qualifications in one of the various industry or skill set qualifications of what the PRC is all about.
Yes, either they have a college degree or they have some experience, as you said, in the field of utilities or transportation or insurance. And that one has passed. There was another one to take the insurance division out of the PRC. That passed. And then there was a third one. I can't remember what that one was about. But these all passed with zero opposition. And they've gone over to the
Senate.
That's
pretty unusual.
Yeah, that is very unusual. And I think it's people's frustration with the corruption and the problems in the Public Regulation Commission. And when they got over to the Senate, there was just the Senate Majority Leader, Michael Sanchez, said that he just didn't think there was enough time to do them in the Senate this year and that we should probably study it some
more. Are
you
kidding me? What?
That's the word.
Okay, I smell, I don't know what. I smell something not quite right.
I mean, it is complicated. You don't want to do any knee-jerk things. I think at least passing a constitutional amendment that says someone who's going to be in the PRC has to have minimum qualifications It's hard to argue with that. If you're talking about restructuring the PRC, maybe taking the insurance commission out, maybe that could wait. But minimum qualifications for the PRC, I think people could pretty much in the Senate even agree with that. But I don't know that they're
except
going to have
the
opportunity.
Except for Michael Sanchez.
Right. So they may not have the opportunity.
Weird.
I was kind of surprised at it. But it's politics. It's
politics, schmolitics. All right. All right. So PRC, call Michael Sanchez, ladies and gentlemen. What else? We've got about 5 or 6 minutes left.
Okay. Well, I thought I'd just talk about some other interesting bills that people might be interested in. As a lot of people know, there's a huge problem with opioids. Those are drugs like Oxycontin and the heavy-duty painkiller drugs.
And which, as we've talked about on this show, they're a problem for people who get addicted to them. They're a tremendous benefit for people who are in serious pain.
Right. Yes, I'm glad you have talked about those issues.
Yeah.
And it seems there's an epidemic in people being able to buy these drugs on the street and then proceed on to more deadlier drugs that aren't prescribed, like heroin. And there have been a lot of deaths a substantive number of deaths in New Mexico from people getting addicted to the opioid drug and then going on to heroin or something else and overdosing and dying. So there have been a couple of studies looking at this problem, and out of those studies came what many of us think was an ill-conceived piece of legislation that really went after the prescribers, the doctors,
right,
and the nurse practitioners and the DOs and the people that prescribe these pain medications for their patients. And the first iteration of this bill had all these limits on how much a person, a physician or another kind of prescriber, could prescribe. How many pills could they give, like only a 7-day supply or a 30-day supply or whatever.
And again, that there's so many issues caught up with that, because people who are in massive, massive pain and don't get the sufficient amount of medication, which is sometimes a very high dose,
mm-hmm,
can actually die from pain, and even if they don't die, suffer tremendously.
There's a friend of mine who's a lobbyist up there who has chronic back pain. He's been on medication for 20 years, and right now he's having trouble getting his prescription refilled. Anyway, this bill caused lots of controversy because it was much too restrictive. It interfered in the patient
doctor
relationship, and it's passed a couple of committees, but it's a very emotional issue because the providers are saying, wait, we have people who have chronic pain. We need to be able to prescribe whatever they need without fearing that somebody's going to come down on us and say that we're, you know, getting people addicted and we're letting medication get out there.
Has anyone addressed the question of where these drugs are coming from? Are they coming from, you know, pharmacists? Are they coming from doctor prescriptions? Are they coming from theft? I mean, what's the stream?
There have been all of these things. And indeed, are there overprescribers? Yes. Are there doctors who make their profession handing out prescriptions, but the Board of Medicine is going after them? And people, you know, unfortunately, a friend of mine's son died, committed suicide, and he was getting his Oxycontin over the internet from a foreign country.
Ah, yes.
So the problem is huge and needs many solutions, not just restricting provider prescriptions.
Yeah, because, I mean, if that's not where the drugs are coming from, you're sort of like looking for the keys under the lamplight when you lost them in the dark.
Right, yes.
All right, so is that what happened with that?
Well, it's still alive. It's going to be on the Senate floor. It's a Senate bill, and it'll be on the Senate floor probably at some point. So there'll be lots of opposition and controversy, and we'll see if it goes or not. But we do need to everybody sit down and try to find some real solutions to this problem.
First, I mean, ladies and gentlemen, first you have to identify the problem.
Right.
I mean, identify the actual physical reality of where these things are coming from.
Well, how do we stop the internet? We can't even tax the internet. So how are we going to stop people from ordering things they shouldn't over the internet?
Yeah.
So that's one bill. We were talking about the memorials. There's over, as I said before, over 600 bills and memorials and constitutional amendments introduced in this 30-day session where it's only really about the budget. But there have been hundreds of memorials. It appears to be just passing, and they're, you know, requiring studies or declaring days. It's just like we like to do memorials when we really can't do anything else.
So memorials are non-binding, but they sometimes set a direction for bills in the future.
Yes, they can create groups that would do studies in the future, although because the departments don't have any money anymore, mostly departments don't even follow the direction of the legislature when they pass a memorial, because a memorial never has to be signed by the governor.
Uh-huh. And so we heard about the memorial that would ban, I don't know if it got off the ground, but would ban New Mexico declaring wilderness areas within, what, 800 miles of the Mexican border? 200 miles?
I think a lot of those kinds of memorials just die in the first committee. Okay. But then there'll be another memorial where they'll debate for 2 hours on the floor of the...
any juicy ones you want to...
I can't think of any really good ones. I'll try to bring a couple when we do our wrap-up of fun memorials.
Right. This is the last legislative update during the session, because the session will already be over a week from today, but we will have, I think, the following Friday, a legislative wrap-up.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
And remember, everybody can still go on the legislative website, look up some of these crazy bills, call your legislature. Our delegation here in Santa Fe is so responsive. Peter Wirth's corporation tax bill.
Yes.
That one passed out of its first committee, but it's sort of languishing over in...
It's Senate Committee.
Senate Finance, its second committee. But
that was a good bill, if I may say so. That equalized corporate taxes across the board.
Right. And he will keep doing it until it passes. I've worked on bills for many, many years before they pass. It's important to hang in there.
Yes, it is, ladies and gentlemen. Linda Siegel is our legislative correspondent. She does the legislative update every Friday during the legislative session. We will see you, I think, in 2 weeks with the legislative wrap-up, and maybe even a little quickie next week if there's anything major to report.
Okay, great. Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
We're going to take a little break right now, and we'll be back with Speaking of the Arts in just a moment. Please stay tuned. I'd like now to welcome Diane Karp. She's the director of the Santa Fe Art Institute, and she is sitting in for Rob DeWalt. Speaking of the arts, neither Rob nor Robert make it today.
That's right.
And I thought, who knows about the arts?
Yeah,
Diane
but they
Karp?
Are enormously large shoes
to fill.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Well.
So
you've
I'm,
got enormously large feet.
I have an enormously large mouth. My feet are not so big. So we're gonna give it a real try.
Excellent. Well, there's always so many things to talk about, and I usually start off talking about the cat of the week. Speaking of the arts, this is not the arts at all, but Valentine's Day is a good time to adopt a sweetheart kitty, a sweetheart of a kitty from Felines and Friends, which is a local cat rescue organization. And that cat in the background, channeled by Diane Karp, is called Cher. Actually, Cher and her daughter Schizo, I kid you not, Ooh. Are this week's featured cats. They're mother and daughter. They're very closely bonded. They need to find a home together. They would be happiest in a quiet home with no small children. If you're interested in adopting Cher and Schizo, call 505-316-2281 or at email askfelinesandfriends@yahoo.com.
And now our feline conscience has been salved, and we can talk about other things.
The arts.
The arts. The arts indeed.
So you've been sitting here for the last 45 minutes highlighting the Pasatiempo.
I have.
What's
going on? I've
been
having a very good time. There's all kinds of stuff going on. And I thought that There are lots of ways to go about this. We could sort of get organized and talk about what's happening on tonight and give people a sort of direct sense of what they should be thinking about.
Yes.
For instance, tonight, Eric Bibb and Guy Davis are performing at the Lensic, and these are two young blues singers who are extraordinary, and they come not out of that sort of rugged, mean, angry world that often built our blues singers, but they come from
the suburbs?
Lineage. No, great, great lineage, and lineage that's kind of astounding, and I think it in many ways informs who they are. Eric Bibb is the son of Leon Bibb, who's a very famous blues singer, but it gets even better, and I learned so much from this wonderful article in the PASA. PASA's writing on the arts is getting better and better and better.
That's awesome.
And it's really wonderful to be able to focus and thank them publicly for the sort of excellence of the writing. But Eric Bibb is not only the son of Leon Bibb, his grandfather was the, or his uncle was part of the Modern Jazz Quartet, which we older folks all grew up on. John Lewis, a brilliant, brilliant jazz musician. And his godfather was Paul Robeson.
Wow.
So talk about lineage. And then you get Guy Davis, who is Ozzie Davis's and Ruby Dee's son, a performer. He's been in theater, he's been on TV, he's been on television as well. And these are two of what they call the next generation bluesmen, but they're phenomenal. And they're performing tonight at the Lensic, so I thought that would really be an important thing for us to talk a little bit about.
Excellent. That is very important, and there's so many things to do tonight. Also tonight at 6 o'clock at Collected Works Bookstore, investigative journalist Sally Denton, whom we talked to the other day, will be giving a presentation of her book, The Plots Against the President, FDR, A Nation in Crisis, and the Rise of the American Right. And I'll be there, too, doing a little bit of Q&A with Sally Denton.
Awesome.
And then at Collected Works Bookstore, also here in Santa Fe, on Sunday from 1 to 4, there will be a Crochet in the Round workshop with designer Deborah Grossman. Students will learn the standard method of making a uniform circle and all sorts of good things. Called 505-988-4226 to reserve a space in that class. And if all that weren't enough, there is a community dialogue tonight at the Hotel Santa Fe from 5 to 7 called Resisting the Politics of Fear, the Connection Between Anti-Immigrant Legislation and the Struggle for Civil Rights. And we talked on this show this week to Scott Douglas, who is from Alabama, and he is the director of the Greater Birmingham Ministries there, and Senator Steve Gallardo from Arizona. He's a state senator there, and both of them are in states that have passed really draconian anti-immigrant laws and are just horrified about what those laws have done to their state. So they will be at the Hotel Santa Fe from 5 to 7 tonight, and they will also be at 10 o'clock this morning at the Rotunda at the state capitol doing an event and conversation there. So check it out. That's all sponsored by Somos Un Pueblo Unido, which is on the web at somosunpueblounido.org.
And one of the most important organizations in town.
They're fabulous. Keeping
us out of the depths of despair that Arizona is living through.
Yeah.
Another really interesting thing tonight is an opening at James Kelly Contemporary. It's the work of Olli Shivonen, and he's a wonderful abstract minimalist painter. Very thoughtful, very elegant work. Definitely worth checking out there on the rail yard. The Santa Fe Community College has an opening of their Superstore, which is an installation by Luke Dorman. Luke is really, really
gifted artist.
Young artist here in Santa Fe, does amazing drawings, and that's another must-see. And if you can't get to all these openings, these things are going to be up for weeks. Please get by and check them out. We need to support both our local artists as well as the amazing ones that we bring in. The Arcos Dance Company is going to be performing both tonight and tomorrow night, and that's at the Performance Space on Pacheco Street. And bench warmers. Our short,
yes,
short plays are once again being presented here at our very sweet, very dear Santa Fe Playhouse. It's one of the most wonderful little theaters
that
I've ever been in. Philadelphia has a tiny little theater like that. And the best things are experienced there. So check out Benchwarmers both tonight and tomorrow.
Now, at El Museo Cultural, there's an exhibition of the roots and culture of the African diaspora, new works and performance art by Greta Chapin McGill and Issa Nyafaga. And Issa Nyafaga is from Cameroon, wonderful artist. And there's a reception today from 5 to 7. And Art for Health Benefit Performance is coming up on the 24th of February. And we'll talk about that closer to that time. But
Issa was a resident at the Santa Fe Art Institute. That's how he came to Santa Fe.
Okay.
And we did this through an organization called Free Dimensional that matches up artists and writers that are in jeopardy or in dangerous situations around the world.
Which he
and
indeed
Issa,
was.
Issa was a cartoonist who made some pretty pointed and powerful cartoons about the government in Cameroon. And after being arrested and beaten and rearrested, everybody decided maybe he needed to leave town. And so he came to the Santa Fe Art Institute and spent 3 months living and working here and has decided Santa Fe is his place.
Yeah,
and
he's
we
here
are
a
so
lot.
Lucky to have him here.
He's a wonderful person, a wonderful artist, and he's always doing these performances to collect money to buy wheelchairs and crutches and over-the-counter
medical equipment and supplies to take to his village, which is
back to Cameroon.
A small village in Cameroon that you can only reach by foot.
Yeah, but he takes these things back. Last time he went back, I saw him like the day before he left, and he said, "Do you have anything that you want to send?" And so I went to Walgreens and bought about a whole bunch of just toothbrushes and Advil.
We've all done that. And one of the things that I like to do is to collect the soaps and the shampoos and the conditioners and the body washes and things whenever you go anywhere.
Those little bottles.
Those little bottles are really wonderful. They're also really wonderful to give to the emergency shelters and to the youth shelters.
Idea.
So when you go to hotels, you've already paid for them. Take them.
Yeah.
And then bring them home and drop them off. It's wonderful how little gestures really matter.
Okay, I've got a couple of them here. At the Travel Bug Bookstore on Sunday, Fred Goldberg shares his vision for a new world economy with host David Bacon. Fred Goldberg is from Brandeis University, has taught at all sorts of universities. And check out the Travel Bug because they've got a whole reading series over there. And then on Thursday at the Whole Foods Community Room, Cooking for the Occupations, Elect to End Hunger and Poverty. So this is Food Not Bombs co-founder Keith McHenry talking about cooking for the Occupy movement.
And something that's happening on Monday at the School for Advanced Research is a wonderful poetry and musical performance. Konko Maidu poet Janice Gould is going to be reading her poetry. She's phenomenal. She's a two-spirit native, and she'll be performing with Joy Harjo as well.
Nice.
Which is quite wonderful, and we rarely sort of hear much about what goes on at SAR, and I think that people need to know more of the brilliant people that are there working.
Yeah, there's not only, I mean, we had Dean Falk the other mm-hmm. the other day talking mm-hmm. about the lecture that happened last night about fossil skulls
yes.
and things like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it used to be just American, Native American art, but they've changed from the School of American Research to the School of Advanced Research.
Right.
And so there's a broad sort of exploration that goes on there.
International archaeology,
international
anthropology.
And literary and art as well, which is quite wonderful. Obviously, on Wednesday coming up the 15th is Michael Ondaatje.
Yes.
Who's going to be reading at the Lensic. And, just a shout out to the Lannan Foundation.
I know, it's sold out.
But you can always go. There are people that buy the tickets that don't get to use them. There's always a chance of getting another one, but
yeah.
The richness of what the Lannan Foundation provides for this community is just
it's unbelievable.
One of the greatest of gifts.
On Sunday, from 1 to 4, Marguerite Bagshaw is opening an exhibition called Breaking the Rules. And from 1 to 3, Native American dance performances by the Oak Canyon Dancers. At 2 o'clock, a lecture called Women's World by Marguerite Bradshaw. And she is apparently part of something which is fairly rare, which is a dynasty of female Native American artists, painters.
And not just a rare dynasty, not that it is rare. This is the one of the great New Mexican dynasties. There was a dynasty that came out of Santa Clara that was Helen Hardin, who's her mom, and even more importantly for me personally, one of my favorite painters, it was Pablita Velarde.
Yeah.
And Pablita Velarde was one of these women who said, no one's going to stop me. And this was 70 years ago.
Right.
And she had this brave, bold vision of being a painter in a Pueblo environment where painting was a man's job. And she went off to the, if I'm not mistaken, it may be her mom who went to IAIA and learned to paint and took her place. But Pablita, the grandmother of this lineage, is a phenomenon. She is one of the painters that transformed not only who paints, but what they paint about. And so, you know, that's going to be just an absolutely brilliant, brilliant exhibition. And that Marguerite Bagshaw is here to talk about it is really one of the greatest gifts for me. Because it's painting, ceramic work, and bronze
that
she's made.
And I hope you can get her on the air in a few weeks. So we'll stay tuned for that, too. At the Santa Fe Farmers Market, there's some children events Saturday, tomorrow, and Sunday. Valentine's Day Tea Party, both at 11 a.m., with Annie Rose the Flower Fairy.
Hey,
free
you know
admission.
The flowers eat fairies.
You know? It's good. It's good stuff. And then the Santa Fe Public Schools Inter-School Strings Concert is tomorrow at 1 o'clock at the Scottish Rite Temple. It's a collaborative project of the Santa Fe Schools, the Chamber Music Festival, the Youth Symphony Association, and the Concert Association. And there's string students from grades 2 through 12. And so they will be playing at the Scottish Rite Temple. For more information, 467, that's area code 505, 467 2513.
Yeah,
and special shout out to the Scottish Rite Temple.
Exactly. Another really interesting exhibition is Richard C. Sandoval, who's been painting northern New Mexico for a very long time, and they're quite beautiful paintings. There's a retrospective up at McLary Fine Art called Art from the Mountains, and definitely a little psychedelic, but quite extraordinary and certainly worth stopping off to look at.
And in a completely not art-related thing, Impact Personal Safety is having a women's basic course coming up that Saturday and Sunday afternoons, February 18th and 19th, and then the following weekend, again, the 25th and 26th. There are payment plans, very generous scholarships for people who can't afford to take the whole pay for the whole course. No qualified aid candidate is turned away. And for more information, and there's other workshops too, children's workshops, all gender intro workshops, and so on, go to impactpersonalsafety.org. And they're a terrific organization. I can kind of vouch for them. I took that course a few years ago, and it definitely makes you feel just that little bit safer, and it definitely gets inside you in ways that are interesting.
And one of the things that we always forget is that you think that you're going to react a certain way in a moment of pressure, but that has to be a little bit reinforced and trained, because otherwise we do what we normally do, which is to freeze. Tonight,
nobody knows how they're going to, that's the thing,
exactly.
Nobody knows how you're going to react in an emergency.
Opening tonight at Rouge Cat is a phenomenal exhibition of photographs. They're the work of Michael Gutierrez, and he has this sort of secret formula that he has for making his photographs. He doesn't like to talk about it, but they're interesting, and I think that it's the kind of work that people ought to take a moment to go and look at. It's a different way of dealing with photography.
Excellent. And a week from today, just giving people the heads up in Taos, David Barsamian will be here talking about freedom of expression, the media, and democracy. David Barsamian is the host of Alternative Radio, and he will be at the Arthur Bell Auditorium a week from today. We'll announce that, and that's in the Harwood Museum. We'll announce it again next week, if I can remember. But for more information on that, go to culturalenergy.org.
There's lots of stuff happening this weekend. There's the Santa Fe Community Convention Dance Party that's happening on from 7 to 10 on Saturday night.
Yeah, the Santa Fe Concert Association.
Yes, exactly, which should be just a groove, and I recommend that people think about doing that. And if you don't want to go dancing and being sort of swing dancey, there's a trio sonata that's being performed on Sunday as well. Oh, Saturday, Sunday. Both Saturday and Sunday, I take that back, at the Immaculate Heart Chapel. So you got a little classical, sort of quiet, conceptual moment to stop and think. Leo Kottke is performing at the Lancet on Sunday. And
this
I got
it.
Yes. I don't know why most people don't know about it.
I don't know that why either.
Leo Kottke is just this amazing guy who channels sort of old country blues players like Charlie Patton and Mississippi John Hurt, and he adds this very almost iconoclastic, modern, contemporary guitar over, you know, interpretation. It should be a great concert. So check out Leo Kottke. And if you want something totally on the other end of the spectrum, Rainbow Vision is having, if I'm not mistaken, a Valentine's Day celebration in their Rainbow Lounge on Friday and Saturday, tonight and tomorrow night. It's a cabaret that's pretty fabulous. There's going to be a lot of people in drag and performances that are going to go, I think, right over the top in a rather direct and immediate way.
She says,
yes.
And there's a free film workshop for youth wanting to learn how to make a film. They're making short films about change. By the end of the first workshop, they will have hands-on training with cameras, film, and audio editing software. Lunch is provided. It's open to all Santa Fe youth, and it's tomorrow from 10 to 4 at Warehouse 21.
Another thing that's going on.
I don't know if there was a deadline on that, but, you know, check it out. Call. Okay, here's a telephone number. Oh, there was a deadline in the future. I don't know what's going on. Anyway, call Warehouse 21 or call here's a cell phone number. It looks like a cell phone number, 819-9966.
I'm going to do some self-promotion here.
Yay.
On Monday night, the Santa Fe Art Institute is starting its 2012 series of Half-Life Patterns of Change, which explores the connection between the visual arts, performing arts, and contemporary societal issues. And we're presenting a panel discussion and a screening of Acting Together on the World Stage, which is a documentary film that was made by the Theater Without Borders group. So we're doing a collaboration. And what we're going to have after the screening of Acting Together on the World Stage, and Acting Together on the World Stage is a documentary that gathers together a whole group of theater organizations around the world who use theater and use performance to answer and address conflict through creative expression.
Nice.
And the group that it will focus on is quite marvelous. Street performances by the Da Theater in Serbia, performances in that come from tales of refugees in the Netherlands, that are told through stage drama, truth-based collaborations between artists and victims of violence and oppression. And they've also got some examples in the film from the U.S., from Cambodia, from Uganda. And the film illustrates performance-based activism and storytelling that comes from the need to take horrible events and transform them into something that we can talk about, that we can engage
yeah.
in. So that's Monday night at the Tipton Hall on the campus of the College of Santa Fe. And the group, Theater Without Borders, comes out of a peace building and arts program at Brandeis University. So we'll have Daniel Banks and Roberta Levitau, who are the founders and now co-directors of Theater Without Borders, and Isanilla Faga is going to be one of the spokesperson, and Jorge de la Torre is going to be one of the spokespersons, and it should be an absolutely marvelous evening, and we'll have a little reception afterwards.
Monday night, 6 o'clock.
Monday night,
Tipton
6
Hall,
o'clock, Tipton
on
Hall.
On the campus of the Santa Fe University of Art and Design.
Yep.
Also known as SFUAD.
S-F-U-A-D. Yes, indeed.
Tuesday night, Valentine's Day, there is an incredible film at the CCA. It's part of their folk art cinema series, and it's called A Separation. It's an Iranian film, and the film actually screened at the Santa Fe Film Festival.
Yes,
and
it did.
I have ever increasing respect for the Santa Fe Film Festival because they last, when was it, October, November?
October, I think.
October.
It was.
They screened films that have now become some of the most important films of the year, like The Artist,
yes,
which stars a Jack Russell Terrier, among other people. And this film, A Separation, which is about, basically it's a family drama, but it is so emotionally complex, and there are undertones. Did you see it,
Yes,
Diane?
I did.
There's undertones of class, which of course we, as mostly non-Iranians watching this film, have maybe a little more trouble teasing out the details of what's going on, but it's basically about family and class and conflict and religion and all of those things woven into a drama that is one of the best written films I've seen.
It was beautiful.
In years. It's beautiful, it's fascinating. And it's at 7:30 on Tuesday. Valentine's Day next week at the CCA, and Kirk Ellis will be hosting it.
Yes.
The great screenwriter and essentially historian.
The Santa Fe Film Festival, now that Brett Clewer is back and has a hand, is being transformed.
Yeah.
So this year, watch for it. Another thing that's going on that's pretty wonderful is Theater Grotesco, and the Out of Context Orchestra is going to be performing Storm, and that'll run from February 17th to 26th. It's going to be at the CCA and the Munoz Waxman Gallery, and the opening night gala is next Friday night.
Can I say one more thing?
Yeah.
Very quickly, a documentary called Israel versus Israel, which is, it follows four Jewish peace activists, a rabbi, a soldier, a grandmother, and an anarchist. And that is happening at 7 o'clock on the 15th and 16th of February. The director will be there in person.
Oh, I have a correction. Thank you very much. There's a mistake. Luke Dorman's Superstore exhibition is at Santa Fe University of Art and Design.
Okay.
Not at the community college. That was a mistake in the PASA. I apologize for that, but it opens tonight. So come on over to campus and check it out. Also, Seon Lee, who is this fabulous, fabulous Korean pianist, is going to be performing at the Lensic as part of the Santa Fe with the Santa Fe Symphony on Sunday, February 19th. It's an afternoon concert. It's the kind of concert you can bring your family to, performing at the Lensic. So check that out. Get some music into your life.
And it's just about time to go. Don't forget Geist Cabaret at Pranzo. David Geist will be performing tonight with Todd Lowry, and tomorrow with Julie Trujillo and J.J. Frank. Diane Karp is the director of the Santa Fe Art Institute, which is on the web at sfai.org. The number over there is 424-5050 in the 505 area code. And thank you so much for getting up at the crack of dawn.
What a pleasure to be here with you guys.
It was really fun.
It's so great to sit here and realize that for a small town, we've got some fabulous arts, culture, literature, films.
I know. All the things we read today, there's no way that one human being can do even half of it.
Absolutely. And everybody in Santa Fe, we got to spread out and cover it. So everyone gets to be a representative for one of us.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at Santa Fe Radio Cafe, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. My email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. And I'm at Twitter. I'm on Twitter at, at Radio Cafe MC. I'm still learning, getting the hang of Twitter. If anybody has any tips on that, you can write me an email. It's a new, very noisy, quick medium. that, I don't know. Anyway,